You can start an e-commerce business, or you can buy an e-commerce business. And sometimes it's time to sell your e-commerce business. So how do you do this? What are the things you need to investigate when it's time to buy or sell? Welcome to the Ecom Manager Podcast. Our mission is to help you succeed in your e-commerce journey with helpful advice from the experts who made it big. I'm your host, François Marchand. Now, today, I'm joined by George Moulos. He's the founder of Ecommerce Brokers, a company that helps entrepreneurs buy and sell e-commerce businesses. We'll be chatting about what you need to look at when you're considering buying an e-commerce business, how to get your business ready when it's time to sell, and of course, how a broker can help facilitate both sides of the transaction. So stay tuned as we dive deep into best practices for buying and selling an e-commerce business and how e-commerce professionals can do it right. So George, welcome to the Ecom Manager Podcast. I'm so happy to have you on the show today. I'm just so fascinated by the idea of buying and selling e-commerce businesses. It's not something I'm super familiar with, I'll be honest with you. And I'm not sure how much our audience is familiar with the process at large. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and what Ecommerce Brokers as a company does, just to give us a quick overview of what's happening here.
Absolutely. Well, firstly, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be on the Ecom Manager Podcast. So to keep it simple, generally speaking, at Ecommerce Brokers, we help people buy and sell online businesses. So that can be e-commerce, you know, kind of your standard Shopify businesses or your Amazon FBA businesses, but it can also be affiliate sites, content sites, SaaS businesses, apps. But look, for the most part, about 80% of our sales are million-dollar Shopify businesses and also marketing agencies. So, you know, generally speaking, as a, I guess, a kind of an overview, we've been selling businesses for 11 years now. That's when I sold my first business. And the industry has definitely changed. I mean, when I started, I didn't even know it was an industry. You know, let's call it online M&A, as I like to call it, a bit of a cool name for it. But yeah, it's kind of an industry that's developing as e-commerce and online economy is developing. It's not really mainstream as an investment, let's call it. But then again, you know, buying and selling businesses, normal businesses, isn't necessarily mainstream as an investment either. The weird thing with online businesses is how many great advantages there are, how much freedom there is with it. And also there's no minimum buy-in, let's call it. You know, you can buy a business that's making a couple hundred bucks for a couple thousand bucks. And you can do it also with very little kind of startup cash. The kind of deals that we're doing on the buy side, up to 50, 60, 70% seller financing, or earn out, which we'll get into later, but it basically means you can start up with very little cash. So the options for investors are great. And the freedom that these businesses give is fantastic too. So on the buy and sell side, which we both operate on the buy and sell side, it's gone really well. It's really, COVID definitely helped. We're one of the only, you know, industries where COVID was great. Yeah, it's definitely developing over time.
Yeah, obviously the pandemic kind of, you know, we talk about this when we address a number of topics. It's reshaped the way e-commerce is growing. It's boosted it in various ways. And it's changing the face of retail and commerce, period, at large, right? So everything's going online. There's more and more transactions taking place without a physical location. And obviously, this is where, you know, e-commerce brokers comes into play for people that want to get into e-commerce or get out of e-commerce if they've decided it's time for them to move on. They've done what they wanted to do. So let's get into the meat of the topic today, how to buy and sell an e-commerce business. So, you know, let's talk, considering your experience, you know, you're the pro here. I want to know, what factors should you consider if you want to buy an e-commerce business? You're an entrepreneur, you want to start a business, you're like, I don't want to build it from scratch. I want to buy something that's already established. Like, what kind of due diligence do I need to conduct before I buy an e-commerce business?
That's a great question. And we answer that almost every day for a lot of our buyers. And first thing I would say is you have to have a good understanding of who you are as a buyer. So you know, the majority of our buyers are US based. They're, let's call it, you know, middle to upper class in terms of income, for example. So, and usually they're about, you know, let's call it 25, the youngest, I would say, up to 70. And a lot of them either have limited knowledge of online retail or none at all. And they want to make the investment, or they want to, you know, at least a piece of the pie of the online business, online e-commerce world. And some, you know, might just be very good at specific type of marketing, Facebook ads, SEO, et cetera. And they want to, you know, use these skills to buy a business. So for that sort of a buyer that is great at a particular type of marketing, or great at product development, or great at recruiting, you know, and building out a team, the type of businesses they specifically should be looking for are businesses that don't have those types of attributes. But look, to answer your question, most generally, most buyers don't have a super sophisticated understanding of all the parts of a online business. So when we look at a business, I'll use a recent example. We helped actually a Canadian buyer who was looking to make their first acquisition, and they had, you know, between 100 and 250K to spend. And we said, you know, let's start small, you know, firstly. And so we ended up doing two acquisitions instead of one big one. And the first acquisition we did, we went out to the market, and my team on the buy side, we said, okay, well, we have a good budget here to buy. And when I say budget, and this is the first step of finding a business to buy, is really, what is our budget? And what does that actually mean for what we can buy? So our first acquisition, we strategized and we said, let's spend 100 grand on the first acquisition. Let's not, you know, go big on the first acquisition, since it was the first acquisition for this buyer. So we said, okay, we've got 100 grand USD. What that actually means we can buy is about 200 to 250 grand worth of businesses, or a business, purely because of what we can do on the financing side. On the financing side, what I mean there is earnout and seller financing. And earnout basically is where you say, okay, you know, let's say the business is worth 200 grand, we'll pay 100 grand upfront in cash, and then the 100 grand of value of the business, we'll basically estimate that out over a year, and we'll pay that out of the earnings of the business. And the conditions will be the business must make a X amount of revenue each month. And if it doesn't make that, then there is no earnout, or there's a reduced earnout. And if there's more than the estimated revenue, they might get a bonus, the seller that is. So earnout is a good way to get a deal across the line for sellers. It's not their favorite type of financing because it doesn't guarantee them their payout, basically. So that's why they prefer seller financing. Seller financing is just a loan, just like a loan you'd get from the bank, except you're getting the loan from the seller. So they're guaranteed by the buyer to pay that amount out over a specific period, usually with up to 5 to 6% interest, and they need to pay that. They'll have a promissory note, a lawyer will draw that up. But it's, again, a great way to get the deal across the line for the seller. As a buyer, it's fantastic because before we could only buy a 100K business, now we can buy a 200K business. And what we do at e-commerce brokers is we're great at negotiating. That's our biggest, you know, attribute, is that we've done that many deals. We just know how to negotiate really well. And that comes with the experience. So what we've found is that there where the average, you know, seller financing portion is 20, 30%, and recently we got 60% seller finance. So we only had to put down 40, I think it was about 42 grand for about a 100 grand business. And then we seller finance that out over a year and a half. So the buyer doesn't actually have to shell out that much money to buy this business that was purchased. So that's the first financial standpoint. If as someone who has 100 grand to spend, we can buy a 200, 250 grand business. So that's already the range that we're looking at in terms of valuation. Now, in terms of valuation, the next question usually is, well, if it's a 200, 250 grand business, what does that actually mean? How much money it makes on a monthly basis? I'm going to pull out my calculator to do some quick maths. So, generally speaking, let's call it a $200,000 business. Most valuations out there, all valuations out there, sorry, are based off the multiple. And the multiple is usually between 1 and 5x. And what that multiple is multiplied by is the trailing 12 months net profit, or EBITDA. Now, for a 200K business, the average multiple last year on businesses sold was, I think, 2.9x, and that's including brokerages, marketplaces, unrepresented sellers. So it's generally low. The sellers we sell for usually, you know, 4x or a little bit higher. So let's say 200 grand valuation is probably making about, so 200 grand valuation, let's divide that by the average of 2.9. So then the trailing 12 months EBITDA would probably be about $70,000. So for $70,000 divided by 12, you can expect the business That's about 200K valuation to make about $6,000 a month in net profit. So that's how we can map out the actual, you know, basically by reverse engineering the valuation, we can map out how much money these businesses make. Then comes all the other stuff. Now, when you're looking at a business to buy, financials come first and everything else is a very, very, very low second. Everything is very financial for buyers and it makes sense. So, and sellers understand that too. Most sellers, some sellers, you know, they talk about the potential of the business and what it could do in 12 months, what it could do in 6 months. And that's kind of interesting for buyers, but buyers really just want to know what has been done, not what could happen. Because it could, like in a month, it could also go to nothing. I mean, we had a lot of stories come from other brokerages in the month of March 2020, where their business went to zero in a month. You know, these were acquisitions and these were the bigger marketplaces that are doing higher volume numbers. But these buyers bought these businesses and then a month later they went to zero. They were in the travels. They were, these shops were doing luggage. And of course that went to zero. So potential isn't that important at the end of the day for evaluation. So those last 12 months of the financials is the most important thing. Then the next thing is age. How old is the business? Anything less than a year old really isn't ready to be sold. And buyers really aren't interested. We've only sold one business over 500K that was less than a year old. One, because we don't actually list businesses that under a year old. And number two, because that business was super fast growing in the medical niche, medical device niche, which is very competitive. So it's got to be a year old. And I would advise any buyer to buy something at least a year old, maybe two. Generally, businesses that are sold are 2 to 5 years old. That's kind of the sweet spot. Any businesses that's older than 5 to 20 years, it's kind of one of those legacy businesses and they've got their own, you know, quirks about them. After age, it's really about what type of niche it is in. Is it an evergreen niche? Is it, you know, a fad? We see a lot of businesses that are basically pump and dump. They do great for 3 to 6 to maybe 12 months and then they're dead. And then the last thing that's most important for serious buyers, and any serious buyer will talk about this, is defensibility. Is this business, you know, just something that, you know, you whip together and it's been doing kind of well? Or is it actually something that you have a trademark on? That's minimum defensibility. At least have a trademark in the US and the EU. Number two is if you can get a supplier exclusivity agreement. So basically, supply in China or Pakistan or India or wherever you might be sourcing from, the US. If you can get a supply exclusivity agreement, that is massively important, not just to buyers, but to banks and investors. Because banks and investors generally almost always don't understand how the online business world works. They never really understand valuations. They either think it's way too high or way too low. So when you show them something like a supply exclusivity agreement, they love that. So they're going to give your buyers, you know, a lot more funds to kind of make the acquisition happen. And of course, there's also patents. Now, it's pretty rare for buyers to have patents, but it happened. For sellers to have patents, but it happens. And look, besides that, it comes to the other things too. What kind of brand equity does your business have? Is your brand recognizable? Is it just one in a million that, you know, made 3 to 6 months buy on their own? Because that's the real question any buyer is asking during the searching process with, let's call it $200,000. Should I buy this business or could I make this business on my own and in 6 months' time be doing what this business is doing today? So after all those kind of steps, which is, like I said, financials of the business and valuation, number two would be age. Number three would be defensibility. And then beyond that, it's all the small things. It's all the, how good is the seller? Do they have their financials in order? Are they audited financials? Is the seller communicating well? Are they clear? And the other thing too is quite quickly looking at businesses and talking to sellers, you get a good intuition of which seller is actually good, truthful, honest, have integrity. And that's very important because you might think like, oh, I'm just going to grab the business off them and that's it. The reality is you're probably going to enter into 30 to 60 up to 90 days of work with this person and you're going to be speaking to them at least a couple times a week, maybe on a call, maybe over email. The integrity of the seller is very important as well, I would say.
I was wondering, like, if I was looking to buy a company, thanks to your advice, I could probably do it myself. It would require a lot of work. And this is probably where if I'm not able to look into all those little details, someone like you or the team at e-commerce brokers would come into play. And would you be able to do all that sort of due diligence analysis for me as a buyer?
Definitely. So what we do at e-commerce brokers on the buy side is, firstly, we're looking over everything for red flags because as it's the online world, there's a lot more things that can go wrong. And the best comparison is buying a house. when buying a house, you can go into the house, you can walk into the house, you can look at the house, you can see, you know, there's mold on the roof and the foundations aren't great. For an online business, it's much harder to do that. But that's what we do. So for the first step is sourcing. You know, my team looks at a ton of businesses every single day, and I'll look at those summaries, and then I look at every business. So, and I've been looking at businesses, almost every decent business listed over 100 grand, let's say, the last 7-8 years I've looked at. So anything really listed on the internet, in especially the US, Australia, Canada, and EU, I've seen the deals. And the volume of deals that I get to see gives me a good idea of what's good immediately. And so for the 6 to 12 month buy side programs we have, we try to give that experience to the buyer. So we're sourcing, you know, hundreds of businesses. We're looking at hundreds of businesses a week. We're putting those into simplified emails for our buyers so they can look at pros, cons, George's broker thoughts, and here's the financials. Simplified, and we give it straight to them. And very quickly, they get an understanding of what's bad, what's good. And then we can jump on something and actually start negotiating very quickly. That's the second thing we do. So our buyer will say, great, you know, George, you know, checkout number 2 this week looks great. See what you can do. Then my team or myself will hop on a call with the seller, collect all the information, which is sometimes a massive headache as well, just to get financials and P&Ls in order and ready. And then I, or as I always say, we work for our fee. We work for our fee on that first or second call, because we negotiate on average 10 to 60% less on price. And then we also negotiate, like I mentioned, 60% seller financing, 60% earnout. So there the price comes from something that's super hard to pay for cash up front to it's far less. And then also you can finance a ton of that as well. So that's the second big step. We know how to negotiate, not just because we're good at negotiating, because we've done a bunch of it, but we also have the most up-to-date industry data on what kind of deals are being done. So we can say to a seller, hey, you know, your business is valued at this, but the industry average for your specific niche is, you know, 0.5% lower, and 90% of deals last year were had some form of financing, and you're not offering any of that. So what can you do for us? You know, we leave these calls 100% of the time with a better deal. We've never said, you know what, we can't help at all. And then, of course, we close the deal, which is the safety part of things. Like I mentioned, you know, it's very hard to check out and analyze a business. So we, of course, we help out with the legal agreements, the LOI, sales agreement, promissory notes. Of course, a lawyer is needed for these agreements. And we have that network of great e-commerce focused lawyers. As you can imagine, the older school type of lawyers want to create a 700-page document, charge you per word and per email and per call. There's a good breed of e-commerce focused lawyers that are fantastic, that'll charge, you know, a reasonable rate. And we have that network across the world. Same goes for accountants, and same goes for some of these due diligence services. Generally speaking, we do a overall kind of macro analysis of the business before and after, before and during due diligence. And we hop on, of course, calls with our buyer to actually run through everything. And we go pros and cons. We do what we can to advise and strategize. And also, like I said, pick out the red flags.
Just want to jump in really quick and ask, how often do you have to say, don't buy this business? Does that happen a bit, a lot, or not at all?
Yeah. So the call that I had just before this podcast was saying, you know, oh my God, I'm so glad we didn't buy that other business, because we're now buying a business that he absolutely loves. So it actually doesn't happen that often, because we generally don't show businesses that we don't really like. But this buyer, for example, brought one of his own businesses that he found, and we said, we're going to dive into this. I personally hopped on a call with the seller. And from the get-go, my intuition said, this is bad. This is something bad's going to happen here. And I hopped off the call and I talked with the buyer, and the buyer loved the business because it was a local business. He knew it personally. And I said to him, look, man, the reality is here, the financials have some big glaring holes in it. As you know, number one, number two, the seller wants to move too fast and it's concerning. Number three, and this is the worst thing that can happen, the seller is trying to play games. Like they're saying, oh, we have a couple offers. This buyer, you know, offered much more. And then this buyer did this and this buyer did that. And also, I know we agreed to this currency, but we actually mean this currency that happens to be much more than what we agreed. And that's where the lack of integrity should scare you away from a deal. And you should definitely listen to your intuition there. So I got off that call and had the call with my buyer and his whole team. And I said, there's no way, you know, we can move forward with this. This is every piece of information that comes in is gets worse and worse. So they're out there. It does happen. And when we're sure about things not being good. We're very clear about that, because the last thing we want is to have a bad reputation. You know, we hired George to keep us safe and get a good deal, and then everything went wrong. And I think the biggest thing that buyers need to know is there's so many great businesses out there at great prices. Just be patient. It's hard in the e-commerce world because we're doing everything so fast. And 1 month you can 2 to 3x your revenue in a business and things feel like they happen overnight. But the deal world of e-commerce is actually, it's fast in the comparison to brick and mortar world of deals, but it's actually relatively slow and you should take your time and don't rush into things. And if you feel like you're overextending, pull back and let things pass, because there's so many other great businesses out there.
Yeah. Well, the last thing you want to do is get into a situation where you're putting all this money into a business only to see it fall apart and fail. And that's where doing your due diligence, analyzing the risk, and making sure that everything is financially sound and structurally sound within the business you're buying is crucial. You can't mess around with that. So yes, I do agree. Take your time. It's your money. Don't waste it. Don't spend it too fast. Make the right decisions. We talked a little bit about how to calculate, you know, the valuation of an e-commerce business and how to determine the asking price, how brokerage comes into play. I want to flip the script and ask about selling your business. So what should e-commerce business owners pay attention to when they are looking to sell? What's their part in getting prepared for that step, moving away from their business or, you know, taking a smaller role and letting someone take over?
No, that's a great question. And we get that a lot from sellers, because a lot of the time sellers will come to us and they'll say, I want to sell my business. And we'll have to say, we can't. Your business right now is either not sellable, or you could really, you know, have a much better valuation in 3 months or 6 months. So the first thing is getting your financials in order. Like I mentioned on the buy side, that's the most important thing that a buyer looks at. So if your financials are a mess, you have glaring holes, or if it's too simple, right? We've seen, you know, P&Ls as revenue or sales, expenses, profit. That's not a P&L. That's a dream, maybe, but you know, you need to get your financials done by an accountant, because that's the only type of financials a buyer will seriously consider. Or you can have them done, you know, rushed at a high expense during due diligence. So one, get that done early on, the financials, and make sure they're honest, because, and then on the buy side, the biggest question really is this net profit really the net profit? Because there's a few questions around that too. You know, if the owner is working 40 hours in the business and the buyer doesn't want to have a job when they buy a business, they're going to have to hire someone. So they need to put a manager's salary in there. If that isn't in that net profit number, that needs to be accounted for. So the financials need to be very clear. That's the first thing. Clean them up, get an accountant, make sure they're clear and honest. Number two, increase the defensibility of your business as much as you can. And trademarks are usually things that, you know, are small things that you don't really consider, and that cost a couple $100, but get them done, because from a buyer's perspective, like I said, the second question they might ask is, for $200,000, $1 million, $5 million, why don't I just start this business? $5 million can buy me some great hires, put a lot of money into ad spend. If they don't even have a trademark, if they don't even have exclusivity agreements, if they don't have, you know, strong brand equity, I could build this, right? So building defensibility as fast as you can is very important. And the number three I would say is, like you mentioned, kind of take yourself away from the business, because one concern for every buyer is after the completion day, which we release the funds of the buyer to the seller and we transfer the business assets, a buyer has a business to operate now that they weren't in before. And that's a scary day. I've bought businesses. I know the feeling. It's scary. You have these people looking to you. Okay, what do we do now? Like, what's changing? And your customers are waiting for your response too. So there's a lot of pressure on you. And not to mention, you just spent a lot of money. As a buyer, you want to know that the seller's prepared for this sale and their role has been either hired out or they've properly prepared you in terms of during the due diligence period, they've made a bunch of SOPs, standard operating procedure documents or videos or looms. That's a great seller. We recently sold an agency where we had a fantastic seller who made a bunch of loom videos, Word docs, and made it super simple and easy for the buyer to say, you know what? I think I could pretty much take this on from day one and I'd understand how to be the CEO of this business. And if not, as a seller, why not have a few hires that you think would be good for roles like a manager, like a CEO? The stress level of a buyer comes down immediately because they know as soon as this business comes into my hands, we're going to be great, you know, in operating this business. We know how things are done. And then, of course, there's also the support period, 30 to 90 days usually. The seller might provide support. But really, you know, you want to limit that by preparing beforehand.
One of the things we talked about in our interview, the Ecom Manager, which you can find, we'll put it in the show notes, talking about how to best choose your e-commerce platform. One of the things you mentioned in that interview, on the more technical side, what do you need to have ready when you're transitioning to selling your business? So can we address some of the factors or some of the technical elements that could scare away, let's say, potential sellers from a technical standpoint? Because like we said, we don't have necessarily a building or a foundation or a leaky roof to show off, but there might be some, you know, technical aspects of how the platform's set up that might not be running properly, or other things, you know, within marketing systems or dashboards that are not reporting correctly. So in a nutshell, what kind of technical things do we need to look at from a software perspective?
Definitely. That's a really good question, because the first thing I would say is, if you have a business where you're selling products, like most e-commerce businesses, you want to really have your site on a platform that most buyers are comfortable on, which is Shopify or Amazon FBA. If you're on Amazon, you're on Amazon FBA, you know, software's standard. But if you're kind of your own standalone business, you could use Shopify, WooCommerce, Magento. There's a bunch of platforms. But then you have to consider, most of my buyers won't be comfortable on WooCommerce, for example. And that's why we always suggest Shopify. It's mainstream. It works. You know, I've operated Shopify businesses. I think they're superior. I've also operated WooCommerce businesses. I think they're inferior for that reason. But more than anything, again, in preparing your business, you want to make sure that you're opening yourself up to the most amount of buyers, and most buyers are comfortable with Shopify. It's kind of just an assumption everyone's on Shopify at this stage. In terms of other software, I would say, and even just programs and platforms, you want to make sure that you're actually running some ads and you're on, that you have some email marketing software or SMS marketing software, and that it's profitable. A lot of the times sellers will come and list their businesses and they'll say, we haven't even done any paid ads. That's not a good thing. That's not, you know, showing us, that's not a good thing for buyers. And sellers will be like, you know, this is all organic, and that organic traffic and, you know, revenue is fantastic. That's good. But the fact that you haven't validated profitable ads isn't a good thing. You know, a buyer wants to come in usually with some cash, say we're going to put 50 grand into ads over the next 6 months. But if you haven't validated that it's actually profitable to run ads on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, Google ads, that's not a good sign necessarily for a buyer. So just having some things, you know, up and running, even if you're not great at it, just have, you know, something up and running is good. And of course, you don't want to have anything banned, any red flags from any social networks. That's something that we've seen in the past where we had a massive, massive skincare brand that just had their Instagram blocked. They couldn't access it. It was like 300,000 followers, and they were all organic sales, that business. So, you know, you don't have any of those red flags, and they'll be found. You can't hide those things. So clean, engaged social media, ads. If you've bought followers or if you've bought traffic, black hat ways, these things are going to come out. These things are going to be found. So you want to make sure your platforms are clean, you know, not banned, safe, and operating and profitable.
Before we wrap, George, I want to know, if I'm a seller, if I'm ready to sell my business, what's the best way to find a potential buyer for my e-commerce business?
Well, I'm biased. I'm going to say use a broker.
Right.
To be honest, I would say brokerages are great for your bigger listings, for your bigger businesses. Because every type of niche and every type of business, online business, kind of has their own particular way to sell nowadays. You know, the online M&A world has developed, even if it's small in its own way. If you're going to sell a business that's under 100 grand, you should probably sell it on your own. And also, brokers usually won't list your business because the commission kind of isn't worth it anymore. Because we charge around that 10% mark, making 10 grand isn't as great as selling a $10 million business. And making, you know, even if it's not 10%, right? It's still much better. So I would say list on your marketplaces, go through your own network. You'd be very surprised about what competitors would be willing to pay. As soon as you get into that 100K plus valuation, meaning 25K profit a year, a broker is just going to make your life easier because you also still need to run the business while you're selling. A lot of the times what happens is someone will get into the mentality of selling, or they'll just start selling and then they come out of the business to make the sale and the business goes downhill. that's a big plus of a broker. And also, a broker just has that network. They have that email list. They have that reach. And usually, they're already on marketplaces. So they have those connections at the marketplaces, and they get you that reach anyway. So I would say use a broker that's great at what they do. If you're looking for a SaaS broker, go directly to a SaaS broker. If you're looking for a Shopify or FBA or agency broker, I would suggest e-commerce brokers, of course, because we've specialized in that. So find your specialized broker with those video testimonials, with those written testimonials, and you want to make sure someone who's been in the business a long time, sold a bunch of businesses, and has those testimonials so you know they're reputable.
And of course, you know, using a broker, especially when you're dealing with a valuation that's much higher than 100K, that's where your team brings in lawyers and evaluators, and like everybody can do the analysis of the business so you don't have to do it yourself. If you're able to do it yourself, if you're a small business or your valuation's under 100K, by all means, do it. But yeah, there are definitely advantages to using a broker. And there are disadvantages if you're a small business. That's totally fair too. Before I let you go, George, and thanks again for being here. Any other insight or advice that you'd like to share about your experience in e-commerce? You know, you've been in this world for more than a decade, and I really appreciate your time and sharing your expertise here. But what's your number one piece of advice you would give e-commerce business managers, founders, CEOs out there today?
Look, I would say be open to the idea of acquiring an online business. It's not mainstream. But I think it will be in 5 to 10 years to have we're all talking about side hustles and little, you know, extra streams of income. It's only becoming normal to kind of see a little Shopify business, a little content site as that extra source of a couple thousand bucks a month. And it runs on its own. You don't even need to necessarily spend that time on it. So as an alternative source of income, buying an online business is something that you can, of course, look into. There's a bunch of research, videos, blogs out there. We have our own, a bunch of other brokerages do as well. So yeah, take a look at buying an online business. I think it's going to become a much more popular way to not just generate income, but also store wealth. If you're going to buy a property that might return 5% a year, well, an online business can return up to 20 to 25% a year on average. So that would be my tip.
Is buying an e-commerce business a sounder investment than buying real estate?
Well, look, I would say, is the risk higher? It is higher. This property is great, you know. At the same time, if you've bought a property already and you're kind of looking for something you can spend $100,000 on, right? I mean, I grew up in Australia. Buying a house in Sydney is going to cost you a tiny studio apartment in Sydney is going to cost you $1 million minimum. Whereas a good online business that can generate, you know, like we said, $5,000 to $7,000 a month, it can cost $100,000. If you want something that's generating cash flow for less than, you know, the price of a quarter of the price of in the West, let's say, online businesses is kind of the way to go these days. So, of course, the business website is ecommerce-brokers.com. We have a YouTube channel under my name, George Moulos, where we're making content about buying, selling businesses. And of course, George Moulos Official on the Instagram is also where, you know, my personal stuff is.
Fantastic. Thank you, George, for being here today. And I want to thank you, everybody listening out there, for tuning into this episode of the Ecom Manager Podcast. We really do appreciate your support. If you liked what you heard today, please don't be shy. Leave us a review, comment, let us know how we're doing. And also, don't forget to subscribe to the Ecom Manager Podcast to be the first to know when we drop a new episode in your feed. Until next time, I'm Francois from the Ecom Manager, and I wish you all the best in your e-commerce journey. See you later.